Hey friends, does time go fast or does it go really slow during these weird, weird, weird times? Oh, I don't know. That's up to you. That's your perception. But I do know this. Time waits for no man or woman. And Thanksgiving is right around the corner, which means it's the annual DKNG Black Friday sale that's going to kick off this November 27th on Black Friday, and it's going to end on Cyber Monday, that is November 29th. Look at these two, not jumping the gun. Right now, Target's already celebrating Black Friday. It's not Black Friday if you celebrate it in October. DKNG will release several new products, including never-before-seen art prints and a new line of holiday-themed letterpress greeting cards. Very, very excited about those. I think this is a year that we all get back into the holiday card game, right? I mean, the last couple of years, it's like, oh, sorry, Grandma, I'm busy, but you don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to go fly to see Grandma. Who knows? Grandma might not be here this Christmas. Mine's long gone. Join the club. So if you're not going to design your own greeting card over at jackprince.com/circleoftrust, where you can make amazing greeting cards with your own design on it, go ahead. Be lazy. Go over to DKNG and get their new letterpress greeting cards that will be releasing as part of their Black Friday sale. Join the DKNG mailing list at dkngstudios.com/newsletter to be the first to know about these sale details and all of the new releases coming from our favorite friends, Dan and Nathan, over at DKNG Studios. What do you say we get started with today's episode right after this? Hey friends, if you do decide to jump in and design your own greeting cards this year, and I would suggest going over to jackprince.com/circleoftrust, where you'll not only save money with our discount as AID listeners and COT members, but before you can print it, you got to design it, and you want to make it look vintage and cool and old school, like something that you found in Grandma's attic, and she'll go, "What is this? Did you take this from me?" No, Grandma, pay attention. I made this for thee. And I fooled your old dumbass by using Debaser for Photoshop from our friends over at True Grit Texture Supply. Coupon code AID available on all products site-wide. What the Debaser for Photoshop does is this. It adds in that nice color saturation. It puts all those little white dots and blobs in there when, you know, printing wasn't quite as efficient as it is today. It makes it look old school. It makes it look like somebody somewhere from a distant time put this together on a press that's not quite up to today's standards, but gives you that old-timey, warm nostalgia feeling. And let me tell you, it's designed by my old friend and coworker, Ryan Besh, who is a maniac, a certified maniac. The guy loves details. He has put hours and hours of his life into perfecting this old look that we both loved. So Ryan's done all the hard work for you. True Grit did that next level of hard work by making Ryan's Insanity an efficient Photoshop plugin. So what do you get to do? You get to reap the rewards of knowing that you have consistent control over these old school techniques to take today's design work and give it that little bit of old-timey nostalgia. So you don't get stuck each and every project trying to reinvent the wheel like my poor, poor Ryan Besh did while I was yelling at him. Job needs to be done by 5. I don't care if the T's don't look like they're perfectly broken. But you can do it fast, you can do it efficient, and you can make your artwork look even better by going to TrueGritTextureSupply.com. Use the coupon code AID discounts site-wide. Dan, Nathan, welcome back to the DKNG show. I want to start right here. There's something that has just been irritating me and it's been bothering me so much. We've lived in a time the last week where a lot of us have watched so much TV. The world's been changing by the minute, by the hour. Nathan, I think you remember 4 years ago me landing in a protest in San Francisco. That night, I went back to your house in San Francisco. And Bachelor Nathan, by the way. And you and I just sit up and watch like CNN and MSNBC for hours. Like we talked ourselves in circles and exhausted. Just like, I think the scariest thing is... So here's where we're at. There's this commercial where this plastic bottle wants to be recycled and it wants to come back as a hero, right? And it comes back as a comb, okay? And it shows this magical moment of like, I always wanted to fly. I always wanted to be a hero. Now, this is the molecule of plastic. So like Disney's already made me feel bad about every fucking dog and deer and cat that exists in the world. And now I got to start thinking about all the plastic around me and what it wants to be reincarnated into its next life. So this shampoo bottle, who basically, if you're a shampoo bottle, you're just, please, nobody stick me up your ass. Just use me for what I'm supposed to be done. Don't use me for anything else.
It comes with lube. I mean, come on.
I mean, it's hey, it's begging for it. But so this little molecule wants to come back as a hero, and it comes back as a comb. All right. And it shows this magical moment, which Dan, you're like 3 or 4 years away from, where it's a dad holding up his son and they're combing their hair together in the mirror. Now, this is a complete lie, because if I was a comb, I've been thinking about this all morning. If I was a comb, how many great moments do I really have? Like, that is peak comb, right? Like, that one moment in your childhood is peak comb. Like, and now I'm going through life this whole morning wondering, like, does my comb go, please don't be a hat day. Please don't be a hat day. Because all I literally get are like 3 strokes, 4 seconds of attention in the morning, right? And if it's a hat day, that comes like, nobody will touch me today. So cold to be the comb. So cold.
And just think, if you had like a lice situation, that's when the comb would be like, this is my time to shine.
Yeah.
Yeah, lice is the comb's 9/11. So I'm just looking at this going, stop it. Stop it, liberal media. Stop putting feelings into everything. You know, we look at the map and we see, you know, all the cities are blue and everything else in the middle is red. It's because of commercials like that. People in the country are like, look, I kill pigs so these people can have brunch. Still don't know what brunch is. Still don't know what rosé all day means. But I'm out here slaughtering things that are alive so you can have bacon. And now you're going to make me feel bad about a particle of plastic, a shampoo bottle that I was nice enough not to put up my farmer ass, that you're going to hold up as a cone and be like, look, son, you comb your hair just like your father does. Well, the cat's in the cradle and the little comb. I'm out of my mind. I'm out of my mind. I did my part. You guys do the rest of the show. I've taught you after 32 episodes how to do this.
Well, okay, I'll take it from here, because I think we all know that life begins once the warm plastic enters the comb mold. So the fact that you are disrespecting a living thing is just, I can't believe you're kicking off the show like this, Mark.
Well, I mean, it's like, I see plastic floating in the ocean, right? And I feel like that sad Native American at the end of that commercial with the tear running down his eye. Like that is disgusting. If you go to the beach and you see all the things that are washing up, like, that's disgusting. But it's like, don't make me feel bad for the trash. Like, I've only got so much empathy to give, and these recycling jerks are stretching me to the limit. I want to tell you guys a real quick story, and then we'll talk about your shitty career. So we had this recycling company come to us, and they wanted to pitch. They wanted to do something different, right? They really wanted to get, like, this is back when we lived in upstate New York. They really wanted to do something different. And so they're like, you know, we saw the campaign that you did for the Buffalo News, where you really, like, kind of shook up the whole website and you made all these characters. Like, they saw that and they came to us. So I was looking at, well, your biggest asset that you have to advertise really are your recycling trucks. Because even though you could do print media and even though you could do ad spots, the truck is really the front line, right? Like, it's moving through the city. Kids love it. People see it. So we have to brand the truck, and then we work backwards to print and web, so that when you see the truck, it makes sense and it's all this big thing. So I literally took the side of a recycling truck and I kind of turned it into this, like, sort of friendly monster. And, you know, we came up with a couple of different taglines about, like, you know, you feed the beast, or you know, recycling, like, creates energy, like, you know, and all these different things, like, right? Like, literally trying to make recycling, like, fun and, like, branding the trucks as characters. And they're like, yeah, we think we're going to stick with our original in-house idea. And I go, oh yeah, what was that? Recycle. Make a difference. Why did you fucking call me? Why did you take my time? I got to get out. I got to move to California to become a podcaster. That's what I started to say to myself.
That was the moment. That's what changed everything.
I was like, no more. So you guys got clients.
Yeah, a couple.
And somehow you guys, and the reason why we do this show is you guys have been able to do this seduction of, hey, you work with us, kid, you go by our rules. And when I look at what little poor innocent white trash Mark Brickley with an iMac, tangerine iMac. I had the orange one. When I look back at that kid's goals, he just thought, man, one day if I could get a job like Sector 9 skateboarding, right? Like designing skateboards, but not just being like, hey, we have 8 decks that need to come out by Tuesday. Like literally collaborating with your client. And with the work that you guys did with Sector 9, it's not only like great skate art. And if anybody would know great skate art, it's me. I've pursued this my whole life. Artwork on skateboards is what got me into thinking about graphic design and illustration would even be possible as a career. But when I looked at these 3 decks that you did, this level of collaboration with the client, the fact that it says your all's name in the graphics, like on the top hit on the deck, which has always been one of my favorite things about a skateboard is like, yeah, the bottom graphics are fun, but I've always really liked how they handle that top hit because it's supposed to be informative. It's not supposed to get too far in the way. So this is really an amazing rollout. And it immediately made me think like, too bad these two couldn't fucking skateboard if their lives depended on it. Dan, have you ever dropped in? Have you ever dropped into a half pipe?
No.
NG?
Well, hold on.
Quarter pipe.
Okay. I knew NG.
More street skating. Like I actually did have a Sector 9 longboard when I was little. It was funny because when this project came along, I was like, oh yeah, my friends used to make fun of me because they all had the Gravity longboards. That was like the cool brand to have. And I had the Sector 9 because I think it was on sale somewhere. But I loved it. And so, yeah, when creative director at Sector 9 reached out, it was like almost like our 311 project or something where it's like, oh yeah, there's this thing from when we were little kids that resonates and now we're actually doing something with them.
Yeah. That's cool when it goes full circle like that.
I haven't dropped into a half pipe, but I've definitely dropped into a pool.
Okay. Like, a bowl.
But it was full of water. It was just a regular pool.
Are you sure you grew up in California? Are you sure that your story checks out? Because other than your house burning down, nothing makes sense to me. Like how Dan against the machine, little Dan against the machine with his head full of dreadlocks. How did you not skateboard growing up? Like, do you know statistically what the odds of little white trash Mark Bricky in Kentucky, Anna becoming a skateboarder is in the 80s? It was all around you. And you're like, I don't know. That looks like work.
Dan was a skimboarder. Dan was more of a beach guy than a. That's not meant to be a joke.
It is.
He was
really
good at it. He was a good skimboarder. Yeah.
Skimboarder.
Yeah. I skimmed all day.
Oh my god! What a life you guys have lived. So, let's get into here. I don't want to mention the art director's name, but when the art director contacted you, did he say something about the former Explorer series? Like, was that a point of entry or is that just where you guys went on your own?
Yeah, that was definitely what inspired this whole thing. I think that whole art print series brought him to us.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so they were just literally like, hey, we like what you did in this series of prints. Would you be interested in doing a series of decks this way?
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we decided, you know, we don't want to repeat ourselves exactly. So maybe we could do a little different treatment. We knew we were going to do this series of 3 decks. So we wanted to tell a little bit of a story. So the first deck has the space shuttle being built. And then it's when it's taking off and then eventually in orbit. So the idea was to do some storytelling there.
Oh yeah. I'm looking from left to right on the graphic over on your website, dkngstudios.com blog. You can see where, on the more traditional skateboard, the type of skateboard that I would have grown up on, that's the construction. Then we see sort of a takeoff in the middle, like teal board. And then we get over into that dodgy shade of blue, which is a hard color to work with. It's full on out into space. Let's start with that color blue. I find that kind of indio, that kind of blue that's like, it's not reflex blue. It's not Dunder Mifflin. But it kind of just has that, like, it has like a warmth to it or like a glow. It just doesn't play well with other colors. That's a really, I've never had any success dealing with that color in my career.
It works pretty well with a lot of neutrals because it's overpowering.
Yeah.
So I think what worked well with this series is that there was like this accent color that kind of was the star of the show for each board.
And that gold type color?
Yeah. So the only other colors that were kind of like associated with it didn't compete. It was black, it was gold, and then basically the color of the wood is a color. So,
oh, what I'm seeing is cream on my monitor is actually the blonde wood of the deck itself.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that's showing through to the maple. And then the other consideration with all these is so you can buy these either as just the deck or the complete with all the hardware, and it was matching the wheel color and the accents on the trucks and things like that to existing. So all these have Gull Wing trucks, and then the Nine Balls, the Sector 9 in-house wheel brand. So there was one point we talked about trying to get custom wheels made and things like that, but it just wasn't feasible for a run like this. So a lot of the color came down to matching those components.
I have to tell you, the traditional skate deck is such a good looking board. And this is where my love of skateboarding really came through. Like, I always loved the graphics, but I saw that as, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that like, that's just art, right? Like, it's just the fun part. But there was something when I was a kid, you know, obsessively looking at every Thrasher magazine, every Trans World magazine, and looking at all, and I've talked about this 1,000 times, but I love the logos because I love the compartmentalizing of space and language and communication. So the fact that that first deck, the street deck, has a logo on the tail, oh, that gets me going. That gets me going. So I love that so much.
And we talked about that a lot because it's like, we knew like that area is obviously when you're riding the board, one of the first places it's going to get worn down. Yep. So are we like kicking ourselves by basically removing our logo? But not one, me. I think there's something cool about that. Like, you want these boards to be ridden and used. And two, it was just the challenge of figuring out where to place things with based on where the trucks are and the screws going, the bolts going through. And some of the boards have that little area carved out for, you know, where the wheels can go. So yeah, that was kind of the only place that would work, and I think we were really happy with that.
I put a skid tail on all or skid plate on all of my boards, so you know I'm not going to scratch any graphics. I'm a poser. I like to keep it clean. No, man, I remember being a kid and being like, "Hey, man, can I ride your new board?" Like, there's really a difference. And you'd be like, "Yeah, you can ride it, but don't scratch my graphics. Don't slide the tail. You know, just like, come on, get out of here." Yeah, these are boards are really great looking, and you know. Skateboard craftsmanship's gone a long way where now in these boards, the plies, 7 plies, those are designed. So there's a pattern in there where the sort of that salmony pink color that you guys use, it repeats as well as the black in between the different layers of maple. There was a while where they like started, Pal Peralta started to put this like weird material between the wood, and the idea was that would maybe make it stronger. It was almost like you know when you see a house and they've already put up the insulation and then they put that like paper shell around it.
Oh yeah, like the Tyvek wrapping in there.
Yeah, they were trying like, what if we put that between the wood? Would that change anything? It didn't change anything. In fact, it just made it come together and look.
Sounds good though.
It just made it look deteriorated as it started to wear down versus, you know, wood just gets like a nice like patina to it. But okay, so work me through this though. The part that when I was looking at this, the part that was most impressive to me was that your names are on the deck. And I remember going way, way, way back to episode like 3 or 4 of AID when we were talking to Aesthetic Apparatus. And, you know, those guys are just geniuses. And one of the things that Dan Gilcito rattled off is like, you know, it used to be when you were a designer, you were anonymous in the project. Mm-hmm. And that really got me thinking about the journey that we've been on now, you know, almost 1300 episodes, is that all of us have sort of been on this quest of like, I don't need to just be the anonymous hands that puts it together. And we all do that from time to time, but there's sort of this win when you get to put your name on it, because what we've seen over the last 2 decades is graphic design or all fundamental disciplines of creativity, it's become an identity for people. So it used to be, you know, you would put on your suit and tie and you would go to the Walt Disney Studios and you put your tie over your shoulder and you'd sit at a draftsman table and nobody really knew who you were, what you were doing for Disney. But now we're in this area of, it almost helps a company when they raise stars, when people know who the players are, like it helps them feel connected to the product. So for you guys having your name on this, that really blew me away. And it just showed like, yeah, guys, this isn't happening in 1984 when I get my first skateboard, you know?
It's pretty cool that Sector 9 does this because they actually reach out to artists specifically to make artist series boards. And so they have a whole section on their website that is dedicated to boards that have been made by artists. And yeah. Part of the process is them actually asking if, you know, we would want our name on it. And I mean, that alone is flattering, just that they actually want our name on their boards.
Yeah.
And it's not all about their brand. And even so much that they're not really like saying that you have to use their Sector 9 branding. As long as it says Sector 9, they're satisfied. So it was really cool to have complete creative freedom and then to also kind of inject our own identity into the board through the process. So it was kind of a dream project through and through.
We've kind of been on the other side of it too, where, I mean, we've always wanted to do skateboards. A few years ago, we had a different skate company approach us about doing some art. And it was much more like what you're describing, Mark, just like production work. They already had the concept. You know, we were going to be anonymous. And
it's a unicorn eating a cheeseburger. I need it by Friday. Can you guys get a dollar one here? All right, I got 500 big ones for you. If you can get this unicorn eating a cheeseburger by Friday, all right?
Exactly. And 500 might have been more generous than what they were.
No, yeah, I know I was rounding up. I know I was rounding up by 500.
We didn't do it, but it always felt like the project that got away. So now that we held out for this one, it made it even more special.
Well, it's perfect timing. And I'd have to say, it's just so cool. All three of them match. It feels like you guys, I mean, it literally looks as if you guys are like, hey, this is a different kind of holiday season. We should maybe make a different product. We're not going to be out doing the booth lifestyle. Like, let's make a big pre-order on our website, because it literally looks like you guys just said, we're going to make three skateboards this fall. And awesome. The fact that there's a client in there paying for it, it just goes to show how far consumerism's gone, how far graphic design's gone. And just like literally how, if you're a younger person listening to this career, it's not, or listen to this episode, I should say, it's not outside of your imagination to say, I want to do this. I want to have people know the work that I do. I don't want to be anonymous in the process. I want to build a career where I keep getting great opportunities because people get to know my name. Not saying that you want to be that guy that signs everything. You know, when you see somebody like in a coffee shop artist, you know, and they're not good. And they paint a cat and it looks like it's made out of wood, and that's not supposed to be intentional. Like, you know, they paint fruit that could never actually
oddly specific
pile on top of each other. But then the one thing they got down is they got that big signature in the bottom of the corner. It's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, their identity is more important than their art.
I just want to say, since then I've gotten a lot better at the cats, so you guys can see some of the new ones.
Well, stop making fun of you, Nathan.
I just want to know, like, you know, Jason Evanson's such a fucking maniac, right? Like, how long did it take him to get a signature that looks like a logo? You know, he's like, now I'm looking at Walt Disney because I want to be one of the best, and I'm seeing how he signed his name. Now, that would, Mark, do you think that was a natural way to sign his name, or do you think he tried to do that? And I guarantee I guarantee you, there's just like somewhere in the Edmonston archives, there's just fucking like 10 notebooks full of him being like, now, does this look, because I'm kind of known as like a horror artist, does this look kind of like scary but approachable? Like, I would love to hear. I got
scary but approachable.
Coming up next week, a whole conversation with Jason about how he learned how to write his name, because it's so specific and it looks great, because he's an actual, like, for real successful artist who has done skateboards. And in many time, because of his unique skill set, he's from the other side of the skateboard world, where it's like, hey, we have a pro. They want something very specific that doesn't exist. We see that you have the skill set to make imagination reality. And so he gets put in that, and congratulations to him before being inside of the new Tony Hawk skater that got released, the new video game. This is a whole different way of getting there. And back to the coffee shop guy, it's just like, that big ass signature just makes you look like a fool, man. Like, just like a fool. Like, I had a real career and I hated signing things, because I'm like, I'm not fucking famous. I'm nobody fucking special. Like, I ruin it by putting my name on it. I just do it because people are like, oh, it's signed? Like, yeah, I mean, if you fucking care, it's signed. I even signed it Hero. I hated my own name so much, I just put a Hero on it.
It's interesting they bring up the signature thing, because I think that that's very much correlated to artists that represent themselves as an individual.
Yeah.
And for me and Nathan, we're representing a company. And a long time ago, we just decided to just start signing everything DKNG.
Sure.
And that in itself is just capital letters. There's nothing special about it. But if you saw like my regular signature, like what I sign receipts for when I buy coffee, it looks like I'm a doctor. It's just a big D with like a line going through it. There's nothing special at all.
Dan, if you're signing artwork, it should say Adobe. Because, I mean, that's, you're just pushing the buttons. But, I mean, that's really who's building stuff.
Basically. I'm just a computer that works for them.
I do still feel like we're defacing our work when we sign a number of stuff. Right? It's just like, oh, man, this poster's clean. Too bad I need to write all over it.
Yeah.
and then it can't win. Like, I think we try to make it small and minimal as possible. But then some people complain. They're like, I can't even tell it's signed. Like, can't you do it big and Sharpie or something? And
yeah.
No, that's not how we do it. So,
or they'll be in the other end of the spectrum where like, hey, can you sign it? And we're about to sign the front. They're like, oh, actually, could you just sign the back? I don't want it to like show up when we frame it.
Could you just sign this post-it note and I'll keep it in a drawer next to the print somewhere?
I just want to know that it happened, but I don't want to see it.
I'm a huge fan of Steve Martin because he's just literally a genius at everything that he does, and also a genius at how he interacts with people. And he hated doing autographs. He hated he liked doing what he did, but didn't enjoy the celebrity aspect that came with it. So when people would ask him for an autograph, he would carry around these business cards and he would just give you one and it would say, congratulations, you met Steve Martin. Or he there's several different ones that would say different things, but he wouldn't sign autographs. He would just give you a business card.
That's actually sweet.
Yeah. And I think it even had more information on it. It said like, this certifies that you met Steve Martin and that I was a pleasant person and that you enjoyed your interaction with me or something.
Yeah. He is like on a whole other wavelength of intellect. But no, guys, this is a really, really cool series, and good on Sector 9 for, you know, understanding that part of what has made skateboarding so influential is the artwork, you know. And there was a moment where they had to decide, like, well, what do we do? Do we pinstripe these and make them look like surfboards or hot rods? And Brian Flynn, owner of Super 7, he has something in his skateboard collection that I absolutely just covet. He has a green prototype of a Santa Cruz skateboard, and it has a one color hit on it. I can't remember exactly what the graphic is. Forgive me for not knowing that off the top of my head, but it has a one color silkscreen hit on it. You can, he showed me, he's like, you're a silkscreener, you'll love this. I could still see the registration marks on the deck. And I go, what is that? He goes, they printed this. They went to the, you know, the expo or wherever where buyers were coming in. And they were like, this summer, we're going to start putting graphics on our decks. And it was literally the prototype of, we're going to put artwork on the bottom of these things. Wow. And, you know, if skateboarding would have went more like its fellow extreme sport cousins that it was, you know, a part of the same moment, you know, not snowboarding, because snowboarding, all it's ever done is give people that are not good at skateboarding a chance to be good at something. And
I like to snowboard.
It's rewarded. Well, you'll go with my second part. It's rewarded rich kids. And then but skateboarding.
So expensive.
Had a way to go with, by the way, Beth put on her winter jacket. We were getting rid of some stuff. She put on her winter jacket and she pulled your lift ticket out of her pocket. And she's like, I love that Dan Culkin's so California that he borrowed a woman's winter jacket to go snowboarding. Anyways.
That goes to show how long it's been since I've snowboarded too.
it's been a while. Anyways, BMX and surfing was just graphic design, and skateboarding decided to go the route of art. And I can't even quantify how that changed the attitude of the sport and the people that it drew in from those old Dogtown and Zorlac and Santa Cruz and Paul Peralta graphics, Vision Streetwear, who had a more like fashion approach. Like, that made the sport so different. So that to me is what makes skateboarding truly somewhere between where self-expressionism and sports meets. And for you guys to be a part of that legacy, it's awesome, man. And you guys did such a great job.
Thank you, man.
And it's kind of crazy that the skateboarding is having a huge renaissance right now because of COVID. And these boards, actually, them until now, is because Sector 9 reached out and was like, we can't keep any boards in stock. Everything is sold out. So they finally have a few back in stock now, but it's just been crazy for them.
Do you guys have copies of these of your own?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sent us complete boards with all the wheels and the gear and everything, and then another set of just the decks themselves.
That's awesome. That is so cool. Dan, you're going to get into a weird spot where you're going to have to explain to Arcade, no. These are display toys, not play toys.
Pretty much, my brother-in-law, John, makes fun of me about this every time he walks into my office. He's just like, oh man, it looks like your whole office is full of toys. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, it sucks for Arcade because he can't touch any of them.
No. Yeah. And I still remember one of my favorite text messages of all time when Dan and I were neighbors. Never forget. I said, hey, I'm running to Lowe's for the craft fair. I need to get some bolts. I need to get this and that. Do you need anything from Lowe's? And he goes, yes. Please give me a can of flat black spray paint for my Brontosaurus. Like this fucking guy.
I was serious. There was nothing funny about that.
Hey, it's still on the desk and it's still black. I came through on my end. Oh, yeah. All right, let's move over to something that's awesome, a fruit that kills dogs. I see that you guys have worked with the Almanac Beer Company with their fruit cobbler beverage. Can you confirm or deny, am I looking at a peach or am I looking at an orange or a nectarine?
Which was the one that killed your dog?
Peach.
This is
a nectarine.
Okay. Thank you.
it's the lesser of the evil stone fruits.
Well, yeah, because the nectarine seeds, orange seed, dog can digest. Peach pit, man. Woo, you're done. You're done if you get that stuck in you. All right.
They're doing a service by taking all the stone fruit off the market, putting it in the beer. You don't have to worry about it being out there anymore.
Yeah. They're killing the fruit for you and your safety.
Well, please do. And I would like to say that has now been over 10 years since I've had a peach or any peach products. I will never, ever have a peach as long as I live. It is the enemy of fruits. But now we look at this fruit cobbler that you guys did. Explain to me, Nathan, this is where your expertise comes in. If I were a beer drinker, and I have a barometer, I mean, even though I've never gotten drunk, I've tasted beer, I know what it tastes like. Explain to me, if I were on a hot autumn's day after baling hay and building my Thanksgiving display in my yard, why would I want to crack open a fruit cobbler? Why would I want to crack open a fruit cobbler Almanac beer?
It is the perfect beer post barn raising to refresh you. I will say that this is kind of maybe a level up for beer drinkers, because this is a sour beer and it's a higher alcohol beer. So this isn't like your Corona crack it on the beach kind of beer. It is more, I mean, this is why they release it seasonally. It's basically like if you smell it, it smells like a fruit cobbler cooling on your windowsill.
So you say sour.
It's a little more. Yeah.
Because because I have drank O'Doul's and like non-alcoholic beverages. And I do have to say, when you've been out and you've been working up a sweat and you kick back and you have an ice cold beer, it is a refreshing beverage, but it tastes different than anything else. Like it's so far off of the teas and coffees and soda factor. So you're telling me, imagine that taste, but it's going to take me in a sour direction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you've probably had kombucha. It almost goes in that direction where it's got a little funkiness to it, some sourness to it. So I'd say it's more of like a sipping beer than just like your typical porch pounder.
Porch pounder.
Sounds sexual.
Okay. So I'm looking at the hero graphic here over at your website. And is this the can sitting in a mock-up where the background is actually the label on the can? Is this like a McEsher thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole like graphic that was placed on the can and then placed into the background as well. So we kind of made it look like a diorama situation where the can's in the world of its own.
And then the art is also inside the can, but you just can't see it because right. The can is opaque.
It's fucking weird, yeah.
It's so McEsher. I'm getting this. So with this type of graphic, you've kind of set up a client established look, right? Like they love your world building. You beg to keep it flat and not, what's that stuff that you love making so much, Dan? Isometric. Yeah, you love that stuff. So this is way, way more flat. And is there a limitation of color in what you got? Oh, it is a peach. I see it coming behind the cloud and it's cut in half.
That's also nectarine. There's no peaches. I'm completely lying to you to make you feel good, but there's definitely no peaches. Yeah, I don't look at the actual descriptor. It's a plum, actually. It's an orange plum.
See, fruit cobbler is so, like, I don't know what I'm getting. Well, what kind of fruit is it? Is it the good fruit or the evil fruit? All right, anyways, is there a restriction of color on this? Because it is a nice palette.
Yeah. It was designed with global colors as if it was going to be screen printed. I think it's 4.
Okay.
Yeah, there's not actually a restriction in the printing process. I think this one was actually printed CMYK with...
Yeah.
A lot of times with these projects, we'll do CMYK with a spot color on top. Mm-hmm. The printing press is called a Flexo press, which is essentially offset. So it does get separated out a lot like screen printing, but we have the option of doing CMYK for more detailed stuff like this.
You know, when you go to the store and you look at all the different, microbreweries and, you know, more smaller batch stuff where the printing's getting kind of crazy, you know, the design's getting pretty crazy. I always like finding an almanac out in the wild and I like picking up and holding it in my hand and looking at it. They have a really, really nice printing that they do. But some companies use, like, it just feels like a cheap sticker. And I only imagine, like, you throw 6 of them in a cooler and it's going to look like the sticker on the side of your Starbucks cup, you know, after an hour or so. So it is one of those things where it's like, I know that it makes putting whatever you want on the can more affordable, but in, like all things in life, inside of that, there's so many different levels of quality that you can go to. Totally. And it seems like they skew much higher on the quality side, because I have picked up some, I'm like, ooh, I don't even like the way that this feels. And it's dry on a shelf. I can only imagine pulling one of them dog cobbler killers out of the cooler. I wasn't drinking it, they're drinking a porch. I can only imagine what that must feel like.
That's a good alternative name.
There's a lot of considerations that have to go into that, because one, when these are going down the canning line and the labels get attached to the can, it needs to be a material that will work with that. And also that is a wet process because the cans are getting washed as they go. So these labels actually have a plastic liner on the inside as opposed to paper is the cheaper option. But like you're saying, paper is kind of like, if you've ever put like a Pacifico or something into a cooler of water and it just peels off, this will hold up. And then also this is a metallized label stock. So it's kind of hard to tell in the mock-up, but all the red text and everything is actually a metallic showing through to the whole surface is basically aluminum that we're then printing white on top of and then printing color on top of that. So it's a pretty, it's definitely a more expensive process, and we like that they're willing to go for that, because they realize that, you know, when they're competing with 1,000 other beers on the shelf, they need something to stand out.
What's nice about the whole metallized surface too is that we can print selectively a white plate over that area, and we can kind of play with shininess and matte finish, and it gives the illusion that we're printing directly onto the can, because the metallized surface is basically the same look as the metal of the can itself. So there's a lot of options in this.
So if you wanted to get fun with this, could you kill the, you know, it looks like a rectangle, right? Like it looks like a rectangle label that's been put on the can. Can it appear die cut? Because when I look at the spine, I see this little thought bubble, you know, this like little text almanac, and it has like information going down the side of it. And that looks like it's just floating on its own. So could you do a can where it was all like floating pieces and it wouldn't have to have like a solid background?
There's a couple ways to do that.
Yeah,
ours is using the actual rectangular shape of the label and either leaving part of it metallic so it appears like it's a die cut shape, or we're using an actual clear label that looks through to the can. But there is, I mean, there's actually breweries here in San Pedro that have done like die cut shapes on top of a can that are like just kind of overlapping over and over again. There's a company called Brewery West that has like these awesome can designs. That's like,
we were looking at one at your house one day, right? And trying to deconstruct how it was made. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how cost effective it is, but they roll the label over itself probably several times. And imagine like, it's just a series of like several circles that are all like printed on. And then those circles overlap each other. And eventually it looks like paper, you know, bubbles on top of themselves. And rather than rolling it once, like 360, they're just going over and over the can like several times. I don't even know how that's doable with like the cost of this, but.
So they're doing smaller runs and doing that manually, like putting a can down, rolling it and putting it away. Whereas something like Almanac is using an automated canning line.
It's Laverne and Shirley.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, it all comes down to what the canning line can grab onto, because basically there's like a little grabber that peels off the label and then wraps it onto the can, and it needs a certain amount of surface area to grab onto. So you can do die cuts on like stuff that we're doing, but they just can't be too complicated, because otherwise it'll get jammed up and you have to clear the machine. And so you do need to do it by hand if you want to do something super detailed like Brewery West.
I there's like certain workers that I put in certain categories in my mind. And when I was in a band, sound guys are just so crabby. Like we were talking on the Hammer Time text thread that the Biden Harris TM had to make a phone call and be like, yeah, I know we told you we were going to bring the stage back on Wednesday, but we're going to probably need it till like Friday or Saturday. And so we were like kind of working out the logistics of them renting that stage. And, Hammer's like, well, they're probably stoked because they're renting nothing right now. Like this is the only event going on in the tri-state area. And then I brought up the thought, I'm like, well, you know, even though the sound guy hasn't worked in 7 months, you know, he's still angry that Biden wants a straight stand for his microphone. And Bicky sends back, it says here in the contract, 3 boom stands, you know, like, and like, they're like, they're very, they want to do things their way. And most sound men will work against you and not with you. And I feel like printing press guys are kind of the same way, or at least many that I've been around in my life. Like, you know, I think it took a whole new generation of printers to sort of look at the press as a way to do something artistic and creative versus, dude, just let me put the cans in and get them done as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So when I see something like that intricate can that has all the different wraps on it, I always go this way. I'm like, it's cool that an artist came up with that idea and fought for it. It's very cool that a company was like, we are willing to spend money in this. But as all things, when you really know an industry, the part that really impresses me is that somewhere, a place that makes money on how fast they can get quantity out of the door, right? Like printing is it's a piece per type of business. That somewhere there was a printsman who's like, that sounds very complicated. I feel willing to tackle that for 2 afternoons instead of trying to get it done in 2 hours. Like, you know, the silk screener that you guys worked with for years, Danny, that's a guy who is an artist at his art form. And he didn't design that poster, but he is such a valuable player because when it goes over into his hands, he works relentlessly to get it to look as good as possible. And if you go back and talk to guys my dad's age that ran trifold brochures and church pamphlets, you're not going to get that kind of customer service. Like that's those guys weren't down to like reinvent the wheel. They're down to like go to lunch and be out by 5.
Yeah, there's 2 types of workers. There's the ones that want to clock out as quick as possible, and they're ones that really enjoy the work they do and are challenged by something and see that as an opportunity to like learn more and be better at it. And Danny was that person. Like everything that we gave him felt like a new approach to how we saw screen printing. And rather than kind of like talking us down to a more simplified way of making it, he took it as, this is a great way for me to like hone in on my craft. Once I learn this, I'll know how to do that for the future and other clients. And it was just awesome working with him.
Took it as
and he still is that person, by the way.
Yeah, he's not dead.
Like we're kind of
he's not dead. We just don't work with them as much as we used to.
But no, it takes a certain type of confidence to take work on as a challenge, as a creative challenge, and not a challenge against you, right? And when I worked with Danny on some of my stuff, I was just floored by how he was willing to get involved early, and you send him mock-ups. He's like, I would kind of do this, I would kind of do that, because I was so used to other printers that would just be like, you know, that doesn't need to be four colors, it could be three. Or they would try to talk you out of stuff, because ultimately they were trying to make their job easier. And yeah. I just think that, you know, part of what we've seen in product design is there's a whole other level of the story that we're not talking about. I mean, yeah, there's companies like Almanac that are like amazing, that they want to put out a product that stands out. There's guys like you all that are having fun playing with the toys and really trying to push what it could look like. But there's an unsung hero in here, which is the press man or pressman, and I'm sure it could be a press lady, that is willing to take on these new challenges and do things in a very different way than what they were done for the last, you know, 30 years of production.
For sure.
Well, shout out to Custom Label up here in the Bay Area. If you need some labels, hit them up.
And you've been there and you've seen... You've actually been on site before, right, NG, and watched the cans go down the line.
Yeah, well, I mean, during normal times, I usually go to the press checks at the printing press. So that's like one thing. And then, yeah, go to the brewery where they used to actually use this thing called the can van. That was like a mobile canning line that they would rent for a day and set up. And
those were crazy days.
Yeah, it was kind of this like Rube Goldberg contraption where they had to like, there's only one guy that knows how to set it up and it's a little different every time. But a few years ago they got their own canning line, which has been way smoother. Yeah. And it's a trip to see there and actually see these things come to life.
That's awesome. All right. Let's hop now over and look at some work that you guys did. Speaking of, these are unprecedented times. You guys went over to, show some work that you did with the LA Lakers. Congratulations, Lakers, on being the NBA champions. Nice to do that during a pandemic time when the city really can't celebrate. And you know what? Just to keep it going, the Dodgers did the same. So I'm going to predict that this year it's either going to be the Browns, the Bills, or the Rams that are going to win the Super Bowl in the year where there's no fans in the stadium. It would probably be the Browns or the Bills because they're complete losers, and they always have been, and this would be the year that it would go their way when their fans can't be there. I mean, the Bills have had some amazing, amazing home game victories, not one person there to celebrate. Or it would probably be the Rams, you know, the team that I now play for, that would have a Super Bowl celebration, and I would be stuck at home, not at a party with friends. So you guys did a poster for the Lakers. Was this for a regular game and it got branded into the champions? How did this all come together?
So this was actually a project that started even before this season, because I mean, it was coincidentally, I mean, it's amazing that they won this year because it was the 60th anniversary of the Lakers. So they decided to make this poster series and hire a different artist to commemorate different eras of the Lakers. So like the Hood Sisters did one.
Right.
I don't know actually if this has been announced yet, so maybe I shouldn't say that.
I'll take that out.
Soon to be announced.
Can you bleep that out?
Yeah.
So yeah, we were commissioned by them to celebrate the 2000s era Lakers, Kobe, Shaq, the three-peat. The idea was that they were going to release these posters at games throughout the season, just like, okay, come tonight and it's 2000s night at the Lakers and at the Staples Center, and we'll like wear the throwback jerseys and do a poster giveaway. So that was the plan, and they started rolling out I think one or two of these, and then that's when COVID hit and the whole thing kind of got scrapped. So yeah, unfortunately, these are not physically out in the world, but it was fun that we got to do it nevertheless.
So let's look at your LA resume. If you know, everybody has a thing on their website, black background, all the logos in white. Maybe you've heard of the people that we've worked for. Lakers in LA is pretty top notch. I mean, that is I mean, even if you're a Clippers fan, or what's the other one? Is it, what's the other team here?
Clippers,
yeah. Right. The old Buffalo Braves. I said that and I just kind of spaced out. I'm not really a big basketball guy, but everybody knows that the Lakers is one of the premier Los Angeles brands. What else do you guys have that's at this level from your home market, Dan?
I mean, this is pretty much as high as it gets, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's one, but we can't talk about it.
Tell me, another couple weeks. Tell me.
It's more California based. Did they start in LA, this client that we're talking about?
Yeah. Area.
Tell me.
Then this is bigger.
Tell me!
You're gonna bleep it?
Yeah, of course. While we're in the bleep, they are a really, really cool company. Okay, that's awesome. That's cool. And actually, I feel like I've seen this. I feel like DK showed this to me, but I wasn't putting two and two together. All right, well, our California white logos back. Black background. This is who we've worked with. It's looking pretty impressive. You guys have HBO or Netflix on there? Or you guys work with anybody in that world yet?
We've done an HBO related thing, not Netflix though.
You got Paramount on there though, right? You got Paramount on there.
Yeah, I think we've got Warner Brothers on there. We have like a good amount of the studios represented.
That's so cool.
That's definitely LA.
It's good that you guys support local business.
Yeah, I'm trying to help them out. Yeah, the brothers. It's right a family now, so. Business over at Warner Brothers.
Hey friends, I hope you enjoyed part one of today's DKNG show. It was brought to you by our friends over at GarmCompany.com, coupon code AID, site-wide discounts. I want to tell you about Tim Barron's Procreate Illustration and Process video class that you can take. Tim Barron is well qualified as a traditional illustrator and has moved over to doing digital illustration like so many of us have. He's broke down all of his tips and trick on how to be a Procreate illustrator, which happens to be my favorite illustration app on the iPad Pro. Absolutely love it. Tim's going to walk you through all the different steps that he takes to do professional level illustrations on the iPad, how he's able to save time, save money by using the iPad as a tool to be efficient. And he's also a family man. So the iPad keeps him in the living room where he just goes, yeah, that's neat that you did that. Daddy's impressed. He's not really looking up. He's just drawing the skull over and over again, but he's doing it in the living room. And that's what matters because it seems like Dad is present. Everybody thinks Dad is paying attention. Go to GarmCompany.com. Use your coupon code AID. Liberate yourself, dads and moms. Get into the living room. Get into the kitchen. Take the iPad with you. You no longer have to be separate from your family. You can be present. At least make it seem like you're present. You're welcome. And that's the meaning of Christmas. GarmCompany.com, site-wide discount, AID. All right, let's do this. Let's get into over 30 more minutes of DKNG show. Actually, more like 40 more minutes of DKNG show. That's available for all of our friends over in the Circle of Trust. Go to AID.network, become a member of the COT. That's how I'm able to make 200 of these conversations come out for you. Some we go into design, some we talk about the world, some we talk about our feelings, some we debate why we hate combs. Now that we know that combs are people too, and that combs have feelings. I can't do it. I can't care any more about anything else. Stop it, marketing people. Stop giving me emotions. I just want to not feel anything. That's not true. Coming up in part two, we talk more about some projects of DKNG. We talk about their vote pen and how they were able to raise a lot of money. And we also get into this burning up question. Is there a creative solution for bringing the blue cities and the red counties together? I mean, if you looked at the election results, you see we have a very divisive America. There's definitely two sides of the old quarter, if you will. And we're trying to talk about on AID, at least right now, is there a creative solution for bringing these two worlds together? I don't want people outside of the city to hate me as a city dweller, and I need to do better on not insulting them and say that they're dumb and they fuck their daughters, because actually I was one of those people and I wasn't dumb, medium intelligence, and I definitely never fucked my daughter because I definitely never made a daughter. But maybe I did fuck their daughter when I moved to the city, and that's where the resentment begins. Can we figure out a solution? Who knows? Probably not, but we're going to give it a good shot. Coming up in part two, available at AID.network. Become a member of the Circle of Trust. Make sure Adventures in Design keeps on rolling. Part two begins right now for members of the COT. Gracias.